How have you not seen this?
Welcome back to How Have You Not Seen This. As always, it's me, your host, Dustin Meadows. Today, I am joined by a guest host, and first time on the podcast, Dan Swartout.
Hey, Dustin. It's great to be here, especially talking about such a great, great movie. It was great to see it again. I can't wait to talk about it.
Absolutely. And our guest is Peter Brick.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
And the movie that I was talking about, we just watched Glengarry Glen Ross. Stage play adapted by David Mamet into a feature film starring Al Pacino, Kevin Spacey, Jack Lemmon, Ed Harris, Alan Arkin, Jonathan Pryce, and just a really obnoxious guy as a cop. and Alec Baldwin, of course.
Of course.
Alec Baldwin, actually, his scene written specifically for the movie, not in the stage version. Really great scene. It absolutely steals that entire thing. Pretty renowned movie. Dan mentioned Pacino got a supporting actor nom for this.
Yeah.
Ended up winning for Son of a Woman, which honestly I feel like is the lesser of these two films, but that's neither here nor there. Dan loves this movie, so I'm going to let Dan say a couple things about it.
I do love this movie, and it's interesting to me because this movie is so iconic now, and so many of the lines have entered into popular culture,
mm-hmm.
from Alec Baldwin's speech to the point where Alec Baldwin, you know, guest hosting Saturday Night Live nearly two decades later, is doing a riff on this speech.
Mm-hmm.
Put the coffee down, coffee's for closers, third place is you're fired. They are all such a part of the pop culture lexicon now, so iconic, which to me is kind of ironic because this movie was not a hit.
Yeah.
It was not a hit at all. It didn't make a lot of money at the box office. It just kind of came and went, and it's something that people, like, I didn't see it until 4 or 5 years after it came out. And it's just something that people have discovered, and it's become so big. That, to me, is one of the most interesting things about this movie, because you can see in TV shows, in movies, in comedy, things directly alluding to this decades later, and it wasn't a hit. It made no impact at all at the time it came out. And to me, that's one of the most fascinating things, is how something can come out and be discovered in the future and renowned and become so much bigger than it ever was.
Yeah, it's weird that you mention that, because, like, it's kind of got this cult classic status, but it's not really a cult classic by any stretch.
No.
It's like, there's not, like, a Lebowski Fest or, like, midnight screenings, like, with a Rocky Horror Picture Show or The Room or something like that. But it definitely, as you said, like, its impact has been felt years after the fact.
Years. I mean, you can go anywhere and say third place is you're fired. Everybody, put that coffee down. Everybody knows what you're talking about. Except for maybe our guest here today.
So, Peter, now that this nice little spread has been laid out before you, how have you not seen this?
Well, when it came out, I was 2 years old.
No excuse.
No excuse.
Well, the funny thing was, I hadn't even, think maybe that until you, I was first talking with you, when you mentioned this movie, I'd never heard of it before.
Yeah. A year ago. This podcast has been almost a year in the making since we started talking about this episode.
Yeah, and I mean, that's not saying much, because I feel like I'm ignorant to a lot of good movies. But, like, I remember, like, you were talking about pop culture references. I remember seeing Alec Baldwin, I think, on 30 Rock and SNL, making brass balls jokes, and I didn't, like, I felt like it was coming from something, and I didn't know
that's
what it was in reference to.
Yeah, well, it's funny, cause, like, Jack Donaghy, his character on 30 Rock, a lot of similarities with this character. I think, like, he has a name, but I don't think his name is ever mentioned aloud. Like, he has a name in the script and in the credits, but he's never addressed by a name.
He's on screen. He's the BMW.
Fuck you. That's
That's exactly.
What if that's in the credits? Fuck you, Alec Baldwin.
It'd be the greatest credit in cinema history.
Oh, it'd be great.
That is such an amazing scene. So much has been said about it over the years. I don't know what I can add, but as many times as I've seen it, it is still enthralling. And I just love the reactions of, you know, the three salesmen who are there. Shelley, obviously, who's kind of like laughing at him originally.
Yeah.
Moss, who's confrontational. And that's just Moss's style throughout the movie. He's confrontational with everybody. And then George just kind of sits there and takes it. And you can really see their, their personalities. I would love... I know that's not the way the movie was written, but in an alternate universe, I would love to see what would have happened if Ricky Roma had been in that room. He just happened to be, you know, because he's always closing. Mm-hmm. He sees James Link at the bar. He's like, I've got a mark right here. Yeah. I'm going to go and try to make a sale, cold call, right out of the blue. So that's the only reason he's not there. And in an alternate universe, I would love to know how they would react to one another. How would Ricky Roma have taken that speech? Because I don't think he would have sat there and...
Oh, absolutely.
No. That would have been a throwdown.
It would have been a throwdown. That.
And also, like, I think that is a testament to how successful HR. Because Ed Harris even has that line. He's like, what, Roma's the top guy in the board? He doesn't got to fucking be here? It's like, no, because he's out closing. He's out doing his job. Instead of smoking and drinking like Jim Beam at a Chinese restaurant across the street.
I was a salesman once. It's a tough racket.
Yeah. I wish I'd seen this movie way earlier than I had.
Me too.
Because I would have, primarily because I would have recognized and avoided getting taken on a couple of like Ponzi scheme type jobs. Because I went to three separate interviews my first year out of college, all for gigs like this. That, like, they didn't really give you a lot of details. And just like, anytime you ask, how much does this job pay, and somebody responds, you determine your success, get the fuck out
of
here. And it took me two or three of those interviews before I learned the hard way. I was like, all right, if that's what they tell you, don't go to that interview.
Yeah.
Because, like, and like in this, you see it a little bit like the life of a salesman, like they're driving around, like they're making house calls and stuff. You don't get comps for that. Like, you don't get reimbursed. That's out of pocket. And if you happen to close a deal, like, that commissions your payment. There's no, like, time cards when you're sitting in the office, like, making those calls. It's like, this is a shit awful job. Like, if you can be successful at it, that's great. But, like, Roma even has that line at one point. It's like, that's fine. I don't need to eat this month because he gets the dog shit leads.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why anyone would go into this industry.
Yeah, I've got a lot of... Actually, one of my past roommates, he's either currently or at least a month ago, he was in real estate as a realtor. And, like, a lot of that stuff that I talked to him about, like, I can see reflected in the movie. Just kind of like, it's rough.
One thing I want to go back, and I apologize for going back, when talked about the pop culture impact, one of the things I completely forgot to mention is the character of Gil from The Simpsons.
Yes.
Gil from The Simpsons is Shelley. Those ColecoVisions will rust up on you. I mean, that's another thing. And I don't think Gil was introduced, I want to say, until maybe like 97.
Yeah.
And again, that's years down the road after that movie had come out. And one of the things, too, is I was watching the movie again, and I'm always kind of looking, try to pick up some new things. And I never really thought about this, but the first half of the movie, one of the things I love is the juxtaposition in the closings that are happening, because you've got Roma trying to close a real estate deal with Link, and he's just kind of talking to him, then he eases into it.
Yeah.
You know, Florida, and he lays out the pamphlet. I pull out a card, I sell, you know? And the same thing with George... with Moss trying to close George on the robbery.
Yeah.
Because basically Moss is talking to him about breaking free and standing up and doing your own thing, and all they've got the leads and that's how the control. And then he's like, he eases into, somebody should break into the building. Somebody should take the leads. And I didn't really ever think about that until watching it just now. You see the juxtapositions of two different attempts to close two very different deals.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really interesting to think about that and how they're closing. And really, the second half of the movie, a lot of it is the repercussions mm-hmm. from how those deals fell apart.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
That's one of the things I wanted to ask you, Peter. Were you surprised with the twist at the end that it was Shelley who broke into the...
I was surprised, and then like I kept that to myself because I thought, oh, you missed something.
Honestly, I was still, you know, as I've seen it so many times that of course I know what's going to happen, I went back and kind of looked for some clues, and there are a few clues, but they are certainly not overt.
Yeah.
Like when he's talking about closing the Nyborg deal and Moss looks over at him and he's like, "You did that?" Today,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and you kind of get just a few very subtle clues that if you know what's happening, but for me, the first time I saw it, I didn't see that coming.
Oh, yeah, it came out of left field when I saw it.
That blindsided me. I thought, like, I thought I missed something. I was like, oh.
Yeah. I thought, like, the only remotely suspicious thing to me is just how, like, the complete tonal shift in Shelley's, like, demeanor. Because, like, he goes from, like, moping and begging and being angry the night before with John Williamson, Kevin Spacey's character, and then he comes in just, like, cock of the walk.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, but I thought that was because he made the sale.
And it absolutely is. But, like, I think there's more to it. And I don't think it's necessarily, like, a tipping point that it reveals it, but I definitely saw it and I was like, he's been kind of mopey and, like, slumming the whole time. And now, like, he's walking in, like, big dick on campus. And it definitely, like, but, like, I did, like, after the initial moment of that, I was just like, oh, okay, he closed the sale, cool. Yeah. But definitely, yeah, like, initially I was like, oh, this is a huge, like, almost out of character switch.
There are a couple things about the Shelley character that are just fascinating, because for what he perceives, you know, he robs the joint.
Yeah.
He gets the $2,500 for the leads. Apparently, presumably, he's got a job with Jerry Graff, mm-hmm. and yet he still goes out and makes a sale for Premier Properties.
Yeah, yeah.
What, you know, and you know, you talk about John calling him deluded, and how can you delude yourself? He maybe is just a delusional person.
Absolutely.
Like, I robbed the place, I'm selling the leads, and I'm still going to be the first name on that board.
Yeah.
It's really an interesting character study into what is this guy actually thinking?
Yeah. And is it like a smarter person, like if Moss had done that, you'd be like, oh, he closed the sale to throw them off the set.
Right.
But like Shelley, you don't really credit with like that kind of criminal mind.
Yeah.
And the other thing you have to wonder, does John just hate Shelley? Not just because of the robbery, because at the beginning. Because, and you know, this is something that after a few viewings you pick up on. John gives Shelley the Nyborg leads.
Yeah.
And yet at the end, when he's explaining everything, he's like, I've got the memo, when we first got the lead, when I was working for Webb. They're nuts. They're insane. They just like talking to salesmen. And yet, he still gives Shelley that lead at the very top of the movie. Why would he do that if he knew it could not possibly be a good close? If otherwise, he comes in with certain animosity against Shelley, and you wonder if it's some of his own delusions that play into that. I don't know.
Yeah, Williamson is never as shitty to anyone as he is to Shelley.
Oh! Yeah.
Like, throughout the movie. So I think there's absolutely some truth to that idea. And even when he gives Roma the Patel lead, it's because literally there's nothing else in the office.
Right, his nostalgia file.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, here, I can give you this because you insist on working. All I have is crap, so that's what you get.
I think, too, it's interesting that we don't know as we watch this movie, we don't know basically anything about these characters. We know that Williamson has kids.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know if he's married.
Yeah.
We know that Shelley has a daughter.
Mm-hmm. Who's sick.
Who's sick in a hospital. Other than that, we don't know anything about George. We don't know anything about Moss. We don't know anything about Roma. I mean, we don't know anything about these characters, which I think kind of makes the movie a little more fascinating, because I think about what's Ricky Roma like at home? Does Ricky Roma have a wife? How does he go home? And does he go home and play with his kids? What does he do? I mean, could you imagine if Moss was your dad? That'd be the worst. Moss might have kids or a wife.
Oh man, he'd be the worst one of the bunch.
<He'd be> terrible. You come home with a B, rich get richer. That's the law of the land. You know, get an A, kid. You know, I don't know. It's just, it's something really fascinating that I think about, because and there are so many characters that are so central to the movie that we don't know at all. We never see Mitch and Murray.
Yeah,
they're huge. They are over the entire movie. Jerry Graff. We don't know anything about these people. We presume that Jerry Graff maybe once worked for Mitch and Murray, went out on his own. Mitch and Murray, they own the joint, presumably, but we don't know anything. We don't know Mitch and Murray's relationship to Alec Baldwin, how he comes in. It's like, will you do us a favor? Did he work for them? Did he work for somebody else? Is he a business partner, an adversary? Is he? There's so many cool unanswered questions that I think give you a lot to think about the movie.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's, you mentioned too, like, we don't get a sense of a lot of the characters that we do see. I think in the space of like 100 minutes, we get an idea of how they would be in those situations.
Yes.
And we wonder about them.
It is something you definitely would wonder about. I mean, what does Ricky Roma do for fun? What are his hobbies?
He just on 100% just hang out in Chinese restaurants. Or the chinks, as he so abrasively refers to it as.
Yeah. Does it? He's kind of using some racist
slurs,
But I mean, yeah, he'll eat at their restaurants.
It's definitely a good. Yeah, it makes the mind race. I'm stumbling over my dumb words here.
Yeah. Stupid words.
But as you mentioned earlier in the scene, like, they're all very dynamic characters. They all do the same thing. Not a single one of them is alike.
No, they're all very different.
Like, Roma's very charismatic, as you mentioned. Moss is very confrontational, short-tempered, to say the least.
Yes.
Shelley is like a fallen from glory, essentially, and just like trying to recapture that. And again, keeping with the delusional thing, like, it's great to see like how he conducts himself when he's asking for the leads, but then like to see him on the phone.
Oh, Grace!
Like, it's
Grace.
Yeah, like that confidence that he manufactures.
I think that too. The name Grace is just perfect, because it's like a name that an older gentleman would assume that your secretary would be named Grace. Oh, Grace, get the negotiable papers, the $10,000.
And the passport is like, who says this on a phone call? I don't think the rich people that I hate talk about.
Oh, wow, this guy's got some negotiable papers. I better buy this land.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, he's got negotiable papers.
He's the real deal.
And the thing is, too, you know, when the rain is, and speaking of the delusion as well, when the rain is pouring and he's in the phone booth and he's still doing the Grace.
Yeah.
There's no way they on the other line can't hear the rain pounding against the phone booth. Like, where is Grace with you? I enjoy watching all of them, and they all lie. They all lie. So I don't know what's true at all, because, for example, when Ricky Roma comes in, second half of the movie, the morning, makes the sale, Williamson tells him that the contract went downtown. He tells him right at the beginning. And so that's a lie.
Yeah.
And then when he lies later on, obviously that's not the lie that Roma wants him to tell.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's telling another lie when the truth would have been better then. And so everybody's lying so often. You have no idea. Like, you know, Ricky Roma talks about my wife dies on a plane. And, you know, when he's pitching James Link. Did his wife die on a plane? We obviously know he's not D. Ray Morton from American Express, head of all of European sales and services.
Yeah.
Home cooking, the magazine, you know. I don't know anything that's true about any of these people. I mean, you know, it's really...
Their names, that's about it. That's all we can assume.
That is all...
Williamson might not even have kids. That could have just been his, like, cut me a break. I just want to go home, sit on my couch with the lights out, and stare into the middle of distance. It's called pulling the Dustin Meadows.
Could you imagine being Williamson and trying to come home and decompress from that work environment?
Oh, it'd be awful. Like I said, like, I can't imagine, like anyone wanting to live in that world, wanting to, like, do that. And Alan Arkin, George, even has that line later. Like, he walks in after he's been very adamantly told to go to lunch several times, which may be my go-to get the hell away from
all
me
the
from
time. I say that all the
go
time.
Go to lunch.
Will you go to lunch?
Yes.
I just absolutely love that. Now, Peter, I'm curious. I don't think many of the characters in this movie are likable. If any of them are likable, which do you perceive as the most likable character?
For me personally, I liked Moss a lot.
We got a sociopath on the show.
I don't know.
Classic Brick.
He's just so angry.
Are you just
like,
going to walk out of the podcast? I'm going to Wisconsin. Yeah, I'm not going home.
I'm going to cars.
You don't know how many times in my head I do that. F the lot of you. All. And I know that abrasive language is allowed on the podcast, but I did use the F, so I apologize. Those of you out there, I gave you the cable version of Dave Moss's Farewell to the Troops speech.
That's respectable. For not being profane.
Yeah.
Moss is seriously the most likable?
I don't know why. I just, like, I mean, I liked Al Pacino, but Moss just had something that resonated with me. Like, he had this frustration.
Yes.
And, like, this bundled up anger.
He had so much.
Like, I used to be a very angry person. I would like to think today I am not, or at least very much.
I can't even
not
picture what you angry looks
like.
Yeah.
In the time that I've known you.
I can't even imagine what would make you angry. And I rode halfway
not across. Having the good leads, apparently.
Yeah. Give me the leads!
For everyone listening, at one point, Peter and I attempted to drive to Ann Arbor for a show that I was doing, and something happened with his car, and it just got completely fucked up along the way. Never got angry about it.
Yeah,
like, wow. I was angry for him. Like, he was just calling me as like, oh, jeez.
Well, geez, fellas, I don't know.
I've had car troubles of my own, like when traveling for comedy and stuff, and I have been furious. But
sure.
Peter was just calm. It's like, oh, we'll figure this out.
We'll figure this out. Maybe something will work out.
Yeah, which is so obviously the opposite of a Dave Moss. So that's just weird.
Yeah, I know. There might be something wrong with me. I don't know.
It's fine to like that. I love Daniel Plainview, and that is clearly a character who is not a good person.
No, he's probably a worse person than Dave Moss.
Oh, absolutely.
I'll say that.
But a very compelling character.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that makes sense.
I find it interesting. I don't know who the most likable character is. It might be George. But then again, George doesn't have a whole lot of positive, strong qualities.
No,
he constantly needs affirmation. Like, when Roman's like, you're a good man, he's like, I am. You know? But, you know, one of the things I find interesting is when George goes in to talk to the police, and he comes out, and he is furious.
Yeah,
he's like, you can't talk to a working man like that. Yeah. These are Gestapo tactics. And he was innocent.
Yeah.
And yet Moss and Shelley, who were guilty as heck, they come out cool as can be, which I think is fascinating that the innocent man comes out furious with the way he was treated, and the two guilty men just come out like, ah, that's just another day at work.
I think being accused tends to set people off.
Sure.
I think Al Pacino's character was talking about that. He's saying the only guy who's relaxed is the thief.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
interesting. Who doesn't?
Thieves. Like, well, Moss comes out a little furious. Here's the thing, though. Do we know that Moss was actually in on it? Because, like, it was his plan, but, like, how much, like, could that have been Shelley overhearing that conversation? Because they were all in the restaurant.
Oh, my gosh,
like,
maybe.
Because that, honestly, it wouldn't surprise me to find out that they were in cahoots together.
But the one thing that makes me think that Moss was definitely involved is the way when George comes out of the meeting with the cops and asks for a cup of coffee, the way that Moss asks him how he's doing.
I think the tone of the way
he said that led me to believe, because I think Moss, I think Moss would have been pissed off if somebody stole his idea. Yeah. He's like, this is my thing. Yeah. And Moss and Moss is the one who had the connection with Jerry Graff.
Yeah, that's
true. And so I think that it's probably, I would say there's a 95% chance that Moss was definitely in on with Shelley. He sees Shelley, you know, he gets rebuffed by George. George says, I'm not doing it. Shelley just happens to walk into the into the restaurant, and he's like, well, I've got I've got this plan here. Here's another guy who's down on his luck. Clearly he's not as good an option as George, because George, you know, didn't have as big a mouth as Shelley.
Yeah.
As John says at the end, you got a big mouth.
Yeah.
So, you know, but he's like, hey, it's tonight's the night. As he said, they're going to bring out the leads, wave them under your nose, and take them downtown. Yeah. Tonight is the thing. The thing is tonight. Give me two regular donuts, two chocolate donuts, the same thing to go.
This is, I want to talk about this before I forget about it. Those are all good points. I still think, I think it could go either way. As far as Moss's involvement, but those are definitely things that I hadn't considered. One of the things that I like most is right after Moss comes out, for me, I think Ricky Roma is one of the most likable characters when he's not on. Like, because when Shelley's telling him that story, he's very respectful of him. He's even like, hey, the machine's telling a story, you know, like, quit being an asshole.
Yeah.
And then Moss goes off. And Ricky Roma is just like, you know, you do well. No, everyone hears about it for a month.
Yeah.
But then your friends do well, and it's just vile. And that reminds me of comedians so much.
Yeah.
Like, I had never thought about it before watching it this time. But, like, there's a lot of us that are at different points in our career. Like, we put in a different amount of time. Obviously, and keeping with Shelley, I think there's all elements of these characters that are very present in comedians. Like, the level of delusion to an extent. And just the idea of, like, entitlement. And especially, like, jealousy at your peers. Like, I have never seen it as much as I see it with, like, artists and entertainers.
Because,
like, you know, half the time somebody finds out that a friend of theirs is on a show, it's not good for them. It's who books that room. Because, like, they're just concerned about getting there. It's like, oh, why is this guy headlining a comedy club? It's like, I don't know. Maybe because they worked their ass off and you've been doing this 6 months. Like, calm down. But I just think there's some interesting parallels there. And I had never noticed those before, so I think it's
I haven't thought about that either. That's interesting. I will think about that on my next viewing, which will probably be next month.
The old monthly Glengarry Glen Ross
viewing. I've heard theories about it, and I watched again. This isn't my thinking, but I've read this theory that Roma wasn't necessarily being a nice guy to Shelley. That Roma knew that Shelley is the one that busts into the office. At least at some point picked up on it. And that's why at the very end, when he comes out of the office after Roma talks to the police, after Williamson and Shelley have their confrontation, he lays it on really thick with the, I've wanted to tell this to you for a while. You know, that stuff you were doing, it was magic, it was brilliant. And just kind of really lays it on thick, knowing that he was the one who busted into the office, that he was the one who was going to go to jail, and just was kind of prodding him a little bit with just a dagger as he's going down, just really talking him up and laying it on thick. Now, I don't know if that's the proper interpretation or if Ricky was being sincere, but it's something I watch for each time I see the movie again.
Well, that's the thing. I think the way this is written and the way the characters interact, like, I think it lends itself to several different interpretations.
Sure.
Like, it's kind of like a thing with, like, a movie, like with the end of, like, American Psycho, how it can be interpreted either way, that he was really crazy or he really wasn't.
Yeah.
That's the same thing with this. Is like, and again, like you mentioned, everybody lies in this movie.
Yes.
So how do we know what is true?
Nobody's just came in from out of town. Nobody's the vice president of anything. Nobody's got negotiable papers.
Yeah.
I mean, they all...
check was cash.
I'm just in town for the night.
What is your... I'm interested for you for a first-time view, because that's one, I think, one of the... People who've seen the movie a lot, think about the movie a lot, maybe write about it online or comment online. One of the things they think about a lot is the James Link character. As somebody who just saw the movie, that's the one that Ricky Roma pitched the $82,000 deal to. His wife made him, you know, rescind the deal. As somebody who saw the movie for the very first time, what is your impression of James Lenk? What do you think about him as a person, his motivations, both in closing the deal and having to come back and rescind the deal? I'm just really curious, as a first-time viewer, your thoughts on James Lenk.
Ugh, James Lenk is me.
You've lost to Link.
I am Moss and Link. I don't know, like, anytime... Like, there's... I'm trying to figure out how to word this. James Lenk is offered a big deal, and it's, like, presented as a big opportunity. And, like, when I've been in a position where I've got, like... Even if it's just, like, a big purchase. Like,
right.
An expensive purchase. And, like, I'm talked into it. I feel sold for the initial purchase, and then I come... Like, I feel like... I don't even have a girlfriend or a wife. But, like, I think my inner wife is like, hey... You need to get your money back.
Yeah.
Or just, like, something in me just kind of collapsed. I'm like, oh, no, that was bad. And I try to, like, go back and get that deal. Like, trying to go back on that.
Link barely says a word the first half of the movie.
He does. He's just listening.
Yes. And then when he comes in, he keeps talking about, you met my wife. And there's... It's something that I think a lot of people have a lot of questions about James Lenk and who he is and what his motivations are, and why is it that he, you know, says, I have no power. I can't do this.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to figure out, because, like, there's obviously something big going on behind the scenes, and, like, it's not, like, at least I got the sense that he did want to go through with the deal.
Yeah.
But there's something going on, like, and it seemed like there was... More, it wasn't about the money. There was something else going on, like
there. Yes,
yeah, relationally or something. It was like he, because he, I don't know. He was like you said, the power thing. Like I don't, this his wife.
Part of me, up until he mentions like that Ricky had actually met his wife, would have wondered if there was even a wife to begin with,
right?
Because if we don't know that, it essentially seems like a guy who was in a bar. Who got swindled, woke up the next morning and realized what he'd done, and then come in to set it right. But we know that the wife is there, so she's an actual factor. But, like, I think the thing to look at is they meet because James Lenk is drinking alone in a Chinese restaurant. Which, like, I've never been married, but I can't imagine that a lot of happy married people spend their nights that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, probably not.
and like... How often... Like, this isn't even...
It's Mexican restaurants for me. It's Mexican restaurants.
Okay, all right. Well, that's the thing, too, is, like, how often... Like, not even a wife, but how often does a friend introduce you to maybe a person they met at a bar, and you just hate them, but they think they're great, and they're really helpful for them. It's like... Part of me kind of sees it as, like, James Lenk brings this guy to his wife... like, oh, he's great, he sold me all this deal. And she kind of, like, plays along for the moment, but then, like, once Roma's out of the picture, is like, all right, yeah, you gotta go fix this, because that guy's fucking worse.
But see, yeah. I don't know if... I don't know if these people are actually being swindled. I mean, if they're being sold legitimate land deals,
yeah.
And you buy, you know, maybe it's a thing you don't want to buy, but, I mean, you know, it's not like they're being sold the Brooklyn Bridge. They are sold
it's definitely,
property.
It's certainly not swindled in the sense of, like, a pyramid scheme or anything like that.
Yeah.
But I think it's definitely, like they even say, like, they ply their trade, like, on their wit and essentially being able to lie with able to make those things seem appealing.
Yeah. Or present things in the best light possible.
Sure.
Exactly.
Yeah, they make, I mean, but the sale at the end, it's like, I would assume, because Premier Properties has been in business that long.
Certainly.
Because, you know, they talk about, you know, Shelley talks about his time up on the board and how long they've been selling property, and Mitch and Murray, I bought that for you, you know? So they've been clearly in business a long time, so they're selling something that's real, I think. Otherwise, you know, it's curious to me. That's one of the things about it. It's like they get these properties So how do they have these properties? Obviously, they... Or is it a commission from somebody who... Are they a middle person? Do they own the properties? It's just an interesting thing to think about, the actual logistics of the business.
It's mind-boggling, because, like, up until this time... And even now, like, I'm still not clear. Like, is it actual properties? Is it timeshares?
Because
that definitely is a huge con. Like, and that's very much a pyramid scheme type thing.
To throw this out there, I do know people who've purchased timeshares and are quite happy with them.
So I'm just throwing that out there. For people who can afford it, absolutely.
Yeah, if you've got the money.
But a lot of the time, it's people trying to take advantage of folks in their checkbooks at like a Marriott hotel conference room or something like that.
Yeah.
Which, again, not necessarily the case, because we don't really get a lot of specifics as to the business and what exactly it is.
Right, yeah. Right. I that's one of the things I'd like to know. If there was like a Glengarry, Glen Ross prequel, you know, the story of Mitch and Murray, I'd like to know exactly how the business works. Because, you know, they mentioned selling properties in Arizona and Florida, so you're thinking probably vacation resorts. You're thinking second properties, vacation homes. Do they actually, you know, buy the land and subdivide the land and then sell it? And it looks like if that's the case, Premier Properties doesn't look like the type of office that would be behind purchasing all this land in Arizona. Not. Or is it the people that subdivide the land come to Premier Properties and say, you sell this land for us, and you get a percentage of the sale. I don't know. All I know is that somebody came to me, gave me $230,000 to present a sales plan. And I said, well, you keep that money and just leave it up to this expert right here. I don't know. It's just something to think about, because there's so many things I think about with the movie as far as how the business actually works. Yeah.
This is why I like movies like Star Wars.
A little clear cut.
Very straightforward.
John, another question I have for somebody who's watched it for the very first time. At the beginning, when Shelley is kind of trying to make that deal with John to get the new leads, the good leads, do you think that John was ever willing to do that deal? Because it's like 20% and $50 a lead, $100. Do you think that was him... If Shelley had that $100 in his hands, do you think John would have been willing to do that deal? Because he only had 30.
Yeah.
What do you think?
He'd got him to 20. He offered him 10%, and they went up to 20%, and then he tagged on the 50. So at first I thought, like, oh, he's going for this. And then when he tagged on the 50, it's like, oh, he's just playing with them.
You think he's playing with them?
Yeah, he's totally playing. Dustin?
Yeah, I think he knew that there was no way Shelley could afford that for the leads.
Yeah, you can see it on his face, too. Like, he's kind of like...
Yeah, like, just the desperation. Like, you get... And I'm sure that Williamson has probably overheard Shelley's phone calls and knows, like, his daughter's in trouble.
Sure.
So, like, he knows that there's no way the machine is rolling in cash.
I never even thought about that perspective. Him probably having an idea of the situation. And then... Boy, but that just... Boy, if that's the case, then it
Williamson's
Williamson in just an even worse
life. Realistically, there's not really a redeemable human being in this entire movie. Mm.
No, I mean, I'm trying to think.
Maybe Larry, the guy that he goes to visit and try to sell land to and then invite himself to the relatives.
And we have been plagued for a year.
Yeah.
I remember that guy showed up in some episodes. He hasn't been in a ton of things that I remember, but I remember seeing him in some episodes of The Sopranos.
Okay.
And I flipped out. And I'm like, I just like, because, I mean, that's such a small role, but I don't care if he were to star in 27 blockbusters from here to the end of his career. He's always the guy whose wife's at the PTA to me. And I have to say, as somebody who has a child, I really appreciated how his home looked. It looked like, it was messy.
Yeah.
And it was disorganized. And it looked like there was a child who actually lived there.
Yeah.
And I really appreciated that attention to detail. And it made me feel a little bit better about myself and my own home.
Something else I think is interesting, too. We mentioned earlier this is adapted from The Stage by David Mamet. From strictly a dialogue perspective, Like, it mostly takes place in one location for a lot of it.
Yeah.
But even the conversations sound like stage conversations, yes, for the most part. And, like, and even, like, with different camera angles and the like, it's still shot in kind of a claustrophobic sense.
Yeah.
So, like, the biggest thing you ever see is, like, a wide shot of the street. And that's it. Like, you never get, like, a sweeping helicopter shot or, like, like a cherry picker. Yeah, nothing like that. So, like, it still feels very self-contained, very small, very minimalist. And I definitely think that that serves the movie. Like, it... Like, if Michael Bay shot this exact script, yeah, it would be a very different movie. Like, shot for shot, did this movie, it would still look way different, which is insane to me.
Yeah.
I'd like to, some of the slang that is used, because I don't know what all of it necessarily means. Like, when Shell at the end, you know, is confessing to Williamson, he's like, I'm ready to do the Dutch. I'm like, what's that? What is the, you know, I'm ready to do the Dutch. I'm like, what does that mean? And there's all sorts of little things, yeah, in there like that where you're like, I'm not exactly sure what this slang is.
I don't know what that is, but from context, I assume that meant he was just willing to rat out Moss. That's kind of what I took it as.
I thought it was, you know, I don't know what it meant, because he's like, I'm willing to do the Dutch, then I am... I'm a salesman. That's what I realized. Put me out of my misery. I'm about ready to get caught. I thought that meant he's willing to go through. I don't know. Yeah. And there's a lot of things like that in the movie that I think is interesting. The dialogue is very, mm-hmm, very interesting as far as people saying things. Like, you've got the memory of a fly.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
I've never heard that. Yeah. I've never heard that, you know, that phrase before. Stuff like that.
Yeah, goldfish and elephants. Way more renowned, yeah, for having a short memory than a, yeah, fly.
Or, I thought elephants don't forget.
Let me buy you a pack of gum. I'll show you how to chew it. Ah! Yeah. I mean, just stuff like that. It's just kind of really...
That one I actually like. That to me was just him razzing him for, to me, like,
sure,
him just being like, but like, oh, what a cool guy I am. And like, that's such a funny, specific way to call somebody a cheap shit.
Yeah, it's just the phraseology, yeah, of it is very interesting. And, I, you know, one day I'd just like to sit down and see if some of this... Because I think the play, if I recall correctly, was written in the early 80s.
Yeah.
I'd like to see if some of these terms that were used, these phrases, these slang words, actually have some sort of a, you know, if they're actually real phrases that were a part of the lexicon at some point,
uh-huh,
or if some of them are just mammoth inventions.
Yeah.
I would like to know that about some of these things.
This is kind of something interesting. We can take our time on this. It just occurred to me. Let's say this movie gets a reboot.
It's a brand new
remake.
Oh, gosh.
Who do you guys cast as the sales team? Including Blake is Alec Baldwin's character. I just remembered the name. And including James Lake.
Oh, gosh.
You know, boy, that's interesting. I would probably, if I were to reboot it, I'd do it in a way like Love Boat style. Okay. You know, get some beloved sitcom people from the 90s to do it. Maybe you get Dave Coulier as George, maybe.
Okay,
I don't know.
I can see that.
I'm just trying to think of, I'm going to be honest with you, I don't know tons of current actors. If I could get, as many of the living sweat hogs to play, that would kind of be the way I would do it.
I want to see Michael Cera as Moss.
That would be a complete switch.
Just like a baby-faced...
Just very angry man.
Perpetually 15-year-old looking guy.
I couldn't imagine doing this movie again.
There's absolutely no reason to.
And most of the actors are still alive, so it's like, what?
All of the actors are still alive.
Jack Lemmon passed.
Oh, Jack Lemmon, you're right. Yes, my bad.
I believe Jack Lemmon received a nomination for this movie as well.
Yes.
He's so good in it. And, you know, he was, Jack Lemmon was such a gifted actor, mm-hmm. both dramatically and comedically. You know, you hope that he's somebody that everyone will continue to remember even as the years passed and new generations get the opportunity to discover his work because it was so, so good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's dramatic, he's great. Comedic, he's
phenomenal.
Insane.
Phenomenal. And how many people could really do both as well as he did it? And it just, in this movie, he's both funny and endearing and,
absolutely,
you know, very dramatic. And there's scenes where you're like kind of laughing along with him, and scenes where you're just like, you feel sorry for him, and scenes where you pity him, and scenes where you can't believe he's doing what he's doing.
Yeah,
just a great, great character. Just a phenomenal character and a great actor.
I agree with that.
When we were talking about Shelley's delusion, like, or, you know, this sort of sense of delusion, I was wondering, just like, it's probably not the case, but when we see him talking on the phone, what if he's not talking to anybody?
Oh, man.
What if he doesn't have a daughter?
That'd be a whole other level. Wow. Maybe. I mean, you know.
Just an idea. I doubt that's the case in the movie. I'm sure he actually has a daughter.
But, I mean, that's the, like, you see a couple of phone calls, you never hear anyone, which is not to say it's the case with everyone.
Yeah.
But it definitely, like, it would be another interesting layer to his level of delusion.
Yeah, still interesting Easter egg there.
That's something to think about, you know. That's interesting, you know. What if his whole life is... he just walks into the office and then who knows where he goes.
Yeah. You
know, great movie.
Maybe he's not in the office.
All right. Here's our reboot cast.
Okay. Dustin's thought about this.
Yeah, he's been thinking.
So, Blake, the Alec Baldwin role.
Yeah.
Tom Hardy.
Oh, my gosh.
What's Tom Hardy been in?
He was Bane. He was in Dark Knight Rises, Inception.
He was
Star Trek Nemesis.
Bronson.
Going way back, yeah, Bronson. He's Mad Max in the new Mad Max movie.
Okay.
Tom Hardy was in Star Trek.
You've named
Nemesis.
Okay.
Yeah,
I have seen none of those films.
he's a very good actor.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Very good.
I'll take your word for it.
Very handsome.
Very intimidating.
Yeah, he would be very, very good for that.
Okay.
What
about Michael Gross? Maybe Michael Gross could do that. That's the dad from Family Ties. I'm just throwing out actors I know.
But wait a minute, was Michael Gross also in Tremors?
Yes, he was. Okay. He was also in Tremors. Okay, see, I'm in your wheelhouse, too.
Yeah, it's like, I know that. Yeah, I was like, there cannot possibly be more than one actor named Michael Gross. For the Kevin Spacey role for John Williamson, Jack Earl Haley.
Which one he?
He was Rorschach in the Watchmen movie.
Oh, yeah!
He was the new Freddy Krueger.
Yeah.
I think he can be sleazy and unlikable.
Yeah.
He, to me, will always be one of the bad news bears. And he had an awesome, awesome role as Chris Peterson's cousin in an incredibly memorable episode of Get a Life. Chris's cousin, Donald, who was the success of the family because he owned a melon stand and had $900 in his checking account. All right, but yeah, Jackie Earl Haley, that good call.
Denzel Washington is Ricky Roma.
Oh, that'd be good.
Fantastic.
Very good. Michael J. Fox in there somewhere. Maybe as James Link.
That can
smaller role. Yeah. He's a legitimately good dramatic actor.
Very good, yes.
What do we got left? We got Dave Moss and the Machine, right?
Yeah.
Oh, man. No, those two I hadn't come to yet. Dave Moss and the Machine...
Dave Moss, let's get more of the Bad News Bears in there. How about Engelbert? Engelbert is Dave Moss. Whichever, I don't care if it's the Engelbert from Bad News Bears or Bad News Bears in Breaking Training. Take them both. Let's do it Olsen twin style.
Yeah. Dave Moss, Hugh Jackman.
Oh my gosh,
dude, I think
a star of stage, no less, too.
I think. Hugh Jackman, I think part of the thing that makes Dave Moss such an interesting character is he's so confrontational, but he's not a big guy. Ed Harrison, I always remember,
that's true.
Ed Harris is kind of slight, and I watch him, I'm like, I'm actually, first, I'm jealous for how thin he is. I'm like, wow, Ed Harris is in great shape, but if you got Hugh Jackman, yeah, he's huge as he was to be the Dave Moss character,
just that raging guy.
Bet if Hugh Jackman was Dave Moss, George would have robbed the place.
Yeah.
You're gonna rob it if you know what's good for you.
Here we go. Here's my counter to that.
Yeah.
J.K. Simmons.
Oh, nice. Who's nice. And a Central Ohio guy.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, he's from Central Ohio.
J.K. Simmons was J. Jonah Jameson in the Sam Raimi Spider-Man.
Schillinger from Oz.
Oh, you guys gotta keep going.
He's in all the insurance commercials.
We are
farmers. He's the guy that leads all the insurance classes on the farmers commercials.
Okay. He was just in Whiplash, which is supposed to be a really good movie.
He got an Academy Award nomination.
The face isn't coming to my mind. Which guy in the Spider-Man movies was he?
The Daily People guy, J. Jonah Jameson.
Spider-Man's
menace.
And he's a Central Ohio guy, so I love that cast.
I didn't know he was from Central Ohio.
Mm-hmm. I believe
J.K. Simmons would be great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wait, who'd you have J.K. Simmons as?
As Moss. That was my counter.
Good Moss.
That's my counter.
That's a great Moss. That's a great Moss. And then so that leaves us with Shelley the Machine Levine.
Zach Galifianakis.
That's the thing. Like, I'm trying to think of an older guy. Clint Eastwood is too grizzled, I think.
Yeah, sure. He's too gritty.
Definitely.
Like, I love Eastwood. I think he's a wonderful actor. Not necessarily one of range.
Yeah.
Like he...
Not at all.
His acting range is grizzled and squinting.
Yeah, he's kind
and
of
And he's
like,
great at it.
He's an American Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I'm trying to think who would fill that role because, I mean, it's such a... You've got to be a tremendous actor because as especially with... the way that character is now perceived in the popular culture with like gills, it would be very easy to make whoever played Shelley the Machine Levine almost like a characterization or a parody.
Yeah.
You'd have to have some chops to pull that off.
I was going to say, I was just thinking the similarity between Levine and between Mickey Rourke's character in The Wrestler.
Yeah.
But Mickey Rourke is way too big.
What if we recast Alan Arkin as Shelley the Machine Levine?
Oh, he's actually been on a legit tear lately.
He won the Little Miss Sunshine. He won an Academy Award for that. He's definitely older now, and I think he's got both the comedic and the dramatic chops to pull it off.
Yeah, actually, it would not be the first time a remake has happened with principal actor recast.
Burt Reynolds. The Longest Yard.
Yeah, Longest Yard.
I'm sure there are others.
Also, the one I was thinking of primarily, I'm probably the only one thinking this, the Sylvester Stallone remake of Get Carter, which originally starred Michael Caine, who appears in a completely different role in the Stallone version.
Oh, Michael Caine would be lovely. How's that?
Michael Caine could be a pretty good...
Actually, yeah, Michael Caine would be a great Levine.
Shelley the Machine Levine.
Yeah, that's the problem, is like thinking of like older actors, because it has to be an older person.
Yeah, but he's got to fake it. He can't just like cast Tommy Lee Jones as Shelley. Like,
no,
Tommy would not be a convincing one.
What about Tom Hanks?
Oh, Tom Hanks could be
a good one.
I don't know if Tom Hanks is quite old enough yet, but Tom Hanks has often been referred to as the modern day Jack Lemmon.
Really?
Yes, because of both his comedic and his
dramatic
chops.
He does have that
range,
absolutely.
I mean, I you know, when I think of Tom Hanks, I know most people think of Tom Hanks differently. I think of Tom Hanks as Bosom Buddies, Uncle Ned. Most people, they'll think Forrest Gump will come to mind or something like that.
Turner and Hooch.
Dragnet, where he's Pep Strebeck. But he's Uncle Ned, and he showed his dramatic chops as originally as Uncle Ned when he was the alcoholic on Family Ties, and I've referenced now Family Ties twice in a Glengarry Glenn Ross and Michael J. Fox. Three times Family Ties.
Three times. Oh man, you know the tragedy actually. Robin Williams would have been great.
Absolutely.
For Levine. Yeah. That's another one. Got the range on both sides of the spectrum.
Yeah, that'd be great.
We got a couple of candidates. I think that's pretty
solid. That's pretty solid.
I'd go pay to see that movie.
Yeah, that'd be fucking wonderful.
You know, Steve Carell, man, and I don't know if you guys have seen Foxcatcher, and I know he got an Academy Award nomination for Foxcatcher. Steve Carell. Boy, there's a guy that, you know, he's phenomenal. And another Central Ohio guy went to Denison.
What?
Yeah. Let's just cast it all Central Ohio.
Yeah.
Oh, then we gotta put Dave Grohl in there somewhere. See the
Wait, is Dave Grohl from Ohio?
Yeah, I actually have not seen Foxcatcher, but
he's very good
in The Way Back.
Yeah.
He's wonderful.
One's The Way Back?
It came out last year. It's kind of like a coming of age movie, but he plays just this loathsome stepfather character.
Oh, I saw that trailer.
It was one of my favorite movies last year. He's very unlikable in it, which means he's perfect for that. So yeah, he's very good. One of the other things I wanted to hit on before we get to the point of wrapping up, Shelley could so easily have gotten away with it in this movie.
Yeah, just
and he opens his big mouth.
He had gotten away
Kevin
with
Spacey
it.
Kevin Spacey even says, like, you've got a big mouth. That's what brings him down.
Yeah, he had already gotten away with it, and
he kept
Pacino had already let Kevin Spacey have it, and then Shelley comes in for, like, round two and, like, blows it.
Like, he lays into him once, goes in to talk to the cops, gets out of there, is like, probably get away with it. And then he says that fucking thing about, like, he has to, like, John's like, Al Pacino's already laid into him, man.
Yeah.
Like, what is this accomplishing?
Yeah.
Don't make something else. Don't make something up.
Don't make something up until you know the shot.
Yeah.
And he blows it.
And then that realization. Now, that's got to be interesting for you watching that first time, because if you think about what's going on in Kevin Spacey's mind, because we don't know that he made it up. As far as, I mean, we're not privy to that information.
Yeah, no.
So when you watch the wheels turning in Kevin Spacey, then he faces Shelley the Machine Levine with that sense of realization.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really a fascinating moment in the movie, because we're not privy to what's a lie and what's the truth.
Yeah.
Only Williamson knows, and only Shelley the Machine Levine knows. We don't even know as the audience.
Yeah. Like it's not like that Die Hard moment,
right?
Where we know that Alan Rickman is not Bill Clay.
Yeah.
Or
Clay.
And why doesn't it show
WM Clay?
Yeah, it's like no, we know he's not Bill Clay.
Right.
We know he's Hans Gruber.
He's
lying. We've known since about 14 minutes into this movie when he opened the back of the Pacific Courier truck and walked onto the loading dock with a bunch of scary European dudes.
Disingenuous.
And that guy from Lethal Weapon. And that guy.
Yeah.
Asian Dawn.
I
read about them in Time magazine.
Oh, God.
Have you done this podcast with Die Hard?
Oh, yes. We did four of the five Die Hard movies, actually.
All right.
And I really... Die Hard is one of the ones, along with Demolition Man, that I wish I could do again, because they're such great movies. And Demolition Man
had Sandra Bullock, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Before she was Sandra Bullock.
Yeah,
I mean,
before
she was...
she had that in Speed, I think, at that point, so she definitely had not blown up.
Yeah. Well, Speed is what really catapulted her.
Yeah, and that was, like, I want to say Speed was a year? Because I think Demolition Man was 94 and Speed was 95.
I want to say that Demolition Man was 93 and Speed was 94.
That may be accurate as well.
And then she was in a movie where she was abducted or vanished or lost, and she had a bit part. She's fantastic. Good for you, Sandra Bullock.
Yeah.
Sandra Bullock is Dave Moss.
Stay. Hey, why not? That would be fantastic that movie and bring in some different elements.
Yeah.
That would be fantastic.
Denzel in the mix.
I'm going to Wisconsin!
What a female cast. Gregory Glover.
Oh, gosh.
That would be fantastic. I would love that. I would love that.
That'd be really cool. Especially because I feel like so much of the themes tied to this movie is kind of attached to the idea of, like, masculinity and manhood. Like, just kind of like those ideals of, like, taking charge and, like,
brass
being capable.
And...
Yeah. Like, and it even says, like, what's the job? Fuck or walk. Like, implying that if you can't do one, you're impotent, which, again, like, very clear emasculation metaphor.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see this with a female cast.
That'd be sweet. Now we got to think about this. Can we do this?
Look, let's just do two concurrent Glengarry Glen Ross reboots.
All right.
Glengarry Glen Ross will be with women. The other one with the dudes will just be Mengarry Men Ross.
All right.
There we go. We keep that. Is there anything else you guys wanted to hit on before we wrap up with our favorite moments?
I think that pretty much all of my notes. I think that hit on all of the notes.
Perfect. You were taking notes.
I took some notes.
I meant to take notes. I had a piece of paper and a pen, but then I just got sucked into the movie and I just didn't.
Yeah.
Easy to get sucked into.
Yeah. Well, let's start with Dan, because I'm sure you probably knew this before I even told you to have this in mind. Favorite moment.
My favorite moment in the movie is it's just a small scene. It's a small part. It's actually just a line of dialogue when Ricky Roma is talking to James Link about the 3 days. And he says, I have no problem with the 3 days. In fact, I was a member of the board when we drafted it, so quite the opposite. I love that line because, one, it just shows what a liar he is. Because there's no way Ricky Roma was on the board. That's legislation. That's consumer protection legislation in whatever state that was. There wasn't a board where they said, let's go find Ricky Roma at Premier Properties to give us this 3-day instruction.
Yeah.
And I just love saying that line because every time I've ever been involved in a real estate closing, they mention the 3 days, and I say that to our closing agent. So they're like, you've got 3 days. They're like, of course, I know about the 3 days. In fact, I was a member of the board when we drafted it. And I say it every single real estate closing I've ever had. So, I mean, I love that particular, just that snippet of dialogue is my favorite part of the movie.
Which also, I feel like that would probably be a relatively clear conflict of interest, too, between his jobs.
Well, I mean, not necessarily, because if you are a representative of that profession, I mean, if he were to legitimately have been on the board, which it's not a board, it's legislation that's passed by the state legislature, signed by the governor. You know, it's not Ricky Roma in his office says, I've got a great idea about the 3 days.
Yeah.
I mean, but you know, they'll often bring in like professional people for their comment on something like that, so. But yeah, no, he doesn't like the 3 days. That's why he was lying about the three days. Uh-huh. It's 3 days from the check is cashed. And that's not it at all.
Yeah.
He's such a liar.
Peter, favorite moment?
I like the opening scene.
Yeah.
There was a lot of tension. And
the opening scene or the scene with Alec Baldwin?
Oh, yeah, Alec Baldwin's speech.
I kind of forget sometimes this movie doesn't begin with that scene.
That's exactly what I was thinking. It begins with Alec Baldwin's speech, but no, it begins in the Chinese.
Yeah.
Are you ready to do or die tonight, Peter?
Have you made your decision for Christ?
I don't know how I'd react in that situation.
Yeah.
That'd be rough.
That's good. Yeah, obviously, again, I love that scene very much as well. I'd say, for me, the two moments when Ricky Roma goes off on Dave Moss towards the end, and then when he lays into John Williamson, like, the
just
so great.
What a dressing down.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What a dressing down.
Why'd you learn your job, you stupid cunt?
I'm just going to say here, I know that this movie has a lot of language that... And I did my best for those of you out there to keep it cable friendly. This is what happens when you meet a stranger in the Alps version. that's the version of the podcast I'm doing, and it might be slightly disconnected from the rest of the podcast. But I'm just throwing that out there. But no, that's the dressing downs are just fantastic because he sends Moss completely over the edge.
To Wisconsin.
Yes. To show farewell to the troops.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Williamson has, for the one time, because Williamson, when he, you know, when Shelley the Machine Levine is dressing him down, he's smirking the whole way through. Because he knows that this is just a guy talking.
Yeah.
But when Roma's dressing him down, you can tell he's got a completely different
demeanor.
And he's got nothing to say.
Like, it's the one legitimate moment of the movie where he doesn't have a leg to stand
and
on.
He's got...
absolutely right.
He's always got a line for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, when Moss is like, you're killing me, baby, out there on the street. Well, I'm sad if you're not happy here. You know? Or it's like...
go to lunch.
Yes! He's always got something to say to everybody. Everybody. except Roma right there.
Man. Yeah. And when he first turns to him after,
both fantastic scenes. My favorite parts in a movie just full of very great
unbelievable. There's like, I mean, that was I felt Peter. It was so hard for me knowing you'd never seen this movie. For me not to just be quoting along with it. Because I know what they're saying. I want to say it. Because I say these things so often in my own just day-to-day life. I would have been the most annoying guy ever. I'm like, I got to keep in mind, Peter hasn't said this. Peter hasn't seen this. So
I thank you. I thank you so much for that.
Cool. I think we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you, Peter, for having never seen movies ever and making sure that I can always do an episode when I need to.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me on. I love doing this.
Certainly. Dan, thank you for coming on. It's been a blast.
My pleasure. Thank you, Dustin.
Absolutely. Definitely want to get you back on again. This has been a lot of fun. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to How Have You Not Seen This. If you enjoyed the podcast, like the page on Facebook. Subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also leave us a rating or a review. If you're interested in donating to the podcast, you can do so through the PayPal link at the Podomatic website, howhaveyounotseenthis.podomatic.com. You can also send any questions, comments for the show to howhaveyounotseenthispodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.